Fred Film Radio. Silent Film Festival, Pordenone, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2017 Pordenone Silent Film Festival with the director of the festival, Jay Weisberg. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So there's lots to talk about, and we're going to do a little overview of the festival that's almost coming to an end as this interview is being recorded. And so we went through a list of things that I'd like to discuss that were screened at the festival. There's so much to talk about, but the first thing, I guess, it's only natural to start with the opening film of the entire festival. And it was The Crowd by King Vidor. Now, what can you tell our listeners about this wonderful movie?
The film is one of the most iconic films of the silent era and also one of the most influential films for future filmmakers. So it's long been said that Vittorio De Sica's Bicycle Thief could not have existed without The Crowd. Billy Wilder's The Apartment could not have existed without The Crowd. Quite a few of the films by Jacques Tati as well. So King Vidor was basically a neorealist before the term ever existed and was looking at the plight of the common man. For me, it's a film that's very difficult to watch repeatedly because I find that I become too emotionally involved almost, and it's painful. It has lovely moments of comedy, and it's just this very, very sweet story about a young couple who are struggling to make ends meet and to make a life for themselves, but the crowd, meaning the world around them, seems to conspire against them. So in some ways it's a film about fate and the constant struggle that we have of daily existence. But it's just so beautifully done. A lot of location work also in New York, which is beautiful. And also it doesn't exist on DVD. There's a bootleg version that you can get out of Spain. But other than that, it doesn't exist. And I believe it must be because of rights issues, but It's a shame. It's a crime, actually, that this film, which is so well known in all of the textbooks, isn't seen nearly enough.
That's really strange. It's not the only film, actually, in the program that doesn't exist on DVD, and that's very worrying. Yeah. Because The Crowd is a great film. And so moving on, because like I said, there's lots to talk about, to the closing film. We're closing with an Ernst Lubitsch.
Yeah, exactly. And that film also doesn't exist on DVD, which is another oddity. The Student Prince in Old Heidelberg has... is far less seen actually than The Crowd, but it's a film that's so Lubitschian in so many ways. On the surface, it looks like this sparkling Middle European or German comedy. You've got Ramon Navarro as a prince who goes to college, to university in Heidelberg, and then falls in love with a barmaid. And so you have that sort of sparkle, and Lubitsch had amazing sets, big crowd scenes, wonderful scenes in the beer garden outside, and yet it's not. It has a very dark edge to it as well. It's not just a comedy by any means at all. It's because in some ways you can compare it, I guess, to Roman Holiday in the sense that, you know, in the end the princess doesn't get her man in Roman Holiday, and basically the same thing happens here, is that duty will out. And Carl Davis has done a score for it, so that's nice. So we've been able to bookend the festival with two orchestral scores by Carl Davis, which isn't bad.
So the catalogue this year on the cover, anyone that has it will be able to see the wonderful actress Louise Brooks. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah, there is. And that's that recently in Prague, it was discovered, now we're in the era of Fragment. The reason for having Louise Brooks on the cover is that we're very excited to be having the international premiere of the rediscovery of the Now We're in the Air Fragment, a film from 1927, which was considered lost until recently when it was discovered in the National Film Archive in Prague. There are a number of reasons why this is important. All of the films that Louise Brooks made in 1927 are lost. This is the only one that we've discovered that survives. There are 23 minutes. Unfortunately, Brooks is only in about 5 of them, so there is that certain frustration. But the moment that she's on screen, she's in this black tutu, very, very sexy, which we've seen for years, for decades, through portrait images by the great photographer Eugene Robert Ritchie, where she's looking so sexy and so modern and so seductive. So we have these images that we know that are iconic for Brooks, and now to suddenly be able to see her move in them adds a whole other level. It's important to remember, so many people are concentrating on the Brooks Fragment, which is great, but the people forget Brooks was not a star. She didn't really become a star until much, much later, until basically after her career ended. So, but especially in Hollywood, when she was working in Now We're in the Air, her salary was really not very, very high at all. 1928, she's moving up in the Hollywood hierarchy and becoming kind of a leading lady status, but she's still not the person with the name above the title. She finally comes to Germany. Of course, you have Pandora's Box, you have Diary of a Lost Girl, you have Prix de Beauté, and then it's gone. It's over. She comes back to the U.S. and she's kind of shoehorned into things that aren't suitable for her, so suddenly her career is gone. But she's become such an icon because of her modernity, because of her sensuality. She's one of the truly instantly recognizable faces of silent cinema, and yet it's important to also remember she wasn't a star. That came later.
There's so many strands of this festival worth talking about. So again, I picked a few that really stood out to me. Lots of films from Scandinavia.
Yeah, that was a program that was suggested to me by curators, one from Denmark, one from Sweden, who were very excited to show me the other side of the golden age of Scandinavian cinema. The golden age is generally meant as late teens, early 20s, when the two master directors of Sweden, Moritz Stiller and Victor Sjöström, made these extraordinary films incorporating high production values, a great sense of location work, using atmosphere and location to also express or underline mood, psychological dramas. But there were so many directors who were at the same time who were deeply influenced by these two greats, who made truly wonderful films that have been forgotten. So directors like John W. Brunius, Sandberg, and it was a great, great treat for me when I went to Stockholm for a week and just sat, and really the highlight of my year was just sitting there in the Swedish Film Institute watching these extraordinary films that, for example, Victor Sjöström is a director we think we all know, and we presented Vem Domer, which is a largely unseen film, and it's extraordinary. Today we have a film called Tora Vandekin by John W. Brunius. It's hardly ever gotten out of the Swedish Film Institute, but I think that when it screens here later today, people are going to say, why don't we know this film? Fantastically strong female character, just a truly terrific drama. And it's important to remember that we shouldn't only just be talking about the great directors who are known, the people who are in the canon. There are so many wonderful directors and wonderful films that are outside of the canon that need reevaluation.
Exactly, and that's a great lead-in for the next strand we're talking about, and that's the Soviet travelogues, which, you know, some of them may not even be identified.
Yeah, exactly. Not only that some of them are not identified, we don't know sometimes who the cameramen are. These almost never go out of Russia now. The archive that has them, it's only recently been opening itself up to outside scholarship and outside work. So it's another case of riches that have been hiding in the archive that people don't know about, and yet there's a wonderful tension in them that I find remarkable to view, because on the one hand you have these in some ways ethnographic accounts of remote areas of the Soviet Empire, Central Asia with Pamir, Roof of the World, Karadagh in the Crimea, forest people in Siberia. So on the one hand, it's very much about the beauty of these spaces, about the fascination with local culture, with native tribes, that sort of thing. And yet there's also that Soviet overlay that you're always finding of, now that Lenin and Stalin are here, we're going to civilize the natives, civilize the primitive folk. But it's quite clear, I find, in so many of these films that the directors are forced into that and really are trying to privilege the beauty, the fascination with other cultures, and then need to put in this, but we are going to civilize them.
We have to move on, but let's stick with something that's maybe even more delicate. I'd say way more delicate, actually. It's a program on the Great War.
Yeah.
And quite a delicate topic to have a strand.
People have asked us in the last few years why we haven't done more on the First World War. It's the anniversary, we should be doing, so many other people are doing. But then it opens you up to the question of, well, what should we be doing to commemorate it? How do we want to show battle films? And there are some wonderful ones, both actual and recreations. A little bit of that can go a long way. And also, at this point in time, and I mean now 2017, I'm reluctant to kind of push that bellicose propagandistic element. And that's why I wanted to do something on the effects of war, to make a parallel with what's happening now, and to say that we have this idea that somehow we've advanced ourselves. We don't have trench warfare, that's true, but everything else is still... The destruction of the First World War is being visited upon the destructions being visited upon Syria, Iraq, Yemen, all these countries, South Sudan. So what have we learned? We've learned nothing. And I think it's important to have that and to remind people that, yes, we're a silent film festival, but we're also very much aware of what's happening in the present, and making those parallels between then and now are important.
That's right. It just goes to show that watching silent films from the first 30 years of cinema in the 21st century matters. Also because, here's another question that I kind of been thinking about recently. Silent films strike me as the type of films that were meant to be seen big.
Yeah, and almost are never seen big. But I think you're absolutely right. And I think the connection that you have with an actor in silent cinema is in some ways deeper than the one that we have for sound films. Because obviously there's more of a mystery, and that's something of a cliche, but we project ourselves more, I think, into silent film. We allow elements of the emotions within silent cinema perhaps to touch us in a deeper way, in a more personal way perhaps. And so there seems to be a kind of greater investment, and having it on the big screen really does make a difference.
Completely agree. And, well, taking it back to the great actresses of the silent era, and speaking of films that haven't been seen, you know, as much as they probably should be seen, Paola Negri is one of the actresses that the festival is paying tribute to, and lots of great films. But our listeners, again, may not be even familiar with Paola Negri, so this gives us a chance to talk about it.
Sure, with great pleasure, because I've been fascinated by Paola Negri for years. And Paola Negri is a fascinating character, because her reputation has basically been hijacked by two things. One was her talent for self-publicity. She had affairs with Charlie Chaplin, she had affair with Rudolph Valentino. So in many ways, that's what people wind up talking about. They talk about the femme fatale, they talk about the fact that she was a publicity hound, which absolutely she was, and also she wrote an autobiography that's just full of errors. Now, are they outright lies? Are they misrememberings? And of course, she didn't really write the autobiography. It was written by a ghostwriter. Who knows? But the problem is that has corrupted the historical record and the historical narrative, and it's overtaken our appreciation of Negri as an actress. She was discovered by Max Reinhardt, the great German theatrical impresario, and then taken under wing by Lubitsch. And she is in some of the greatest of Lubitsch's silent films, Madame du Barry, Carmen, Die Bergkatze. Then also when she moves to the United States, Forbidden Paradise, which she's wonderful in. So Negri is one of the great actresses of the silent era, and yet her reputation has been overwhelmed by her persona. So I thought it was very important to try to get back to look at Negri as an actress. We have three films from 1918, which gives us a much better way of approaching her just at the beginning of her stardom. But also, another problem with Negri's scholarship is that she's a Polish actress who made films first in Poland, then in Germany, and then in the United States, and then back in Germany, and then back in the United States. And there are very few scholars who are fluent in all three languages. So that's another problem, is there hasn't been enough communication between the different scholars, and it's something that I'm hoping to foster with this and the future projects, is to get a collaborative study going, where we can finally resurrect Negri for the... You can almost say the authorial voice that she gave her films. We talk a lot about the Italian divas like Francesca Bertini, Pina Menichelli, Lida Borelli, and we're giving them prominence as auteurs. We're talking about Asta Nielsen, the great Danish actress who worked in Germany as an auteur, and we need to put Paula Negri onto that level as well.
All right, because I personally was impressed by the range of characters that she could play. For instance, you mentioned Carmen, but then there was another great film that I was fascinated by, and it's called The Yellow Ticket. Yeah. I believe it does have another title. I don't know.
Die Gelbe Schein in German, and then it was called The Devil's Pawn, which is a ridiculous title, when it was released in the United States in 1922.
That's right, and the two characters are quite different.
They're very different. Completely different, and that again, that was one of the things I wanted to do, was to show off her range. And then this evening, there's a film called Mania, which was recently discovered in Poland, which has a kind of, it's a riff on the Carmen story, but also with dancing. And Pola, before even Max Reinhardt, started off as a dancer. So, and I discovered this fantastic review in one of the French newspapers from 1914, I think it is, and she's 15 years old, and it was her theatrical debut in Warsaw. And the critic is saying, we've got to look at this girl. She's amazing. And one of the things that I love about watching Paula Negri is that you sense that she's a dancer, how she moves. There's a fantastic film by Paul Zinner from 1929. And the first shot, if I remember, that you see of her, it's from her back. And just the way that she's moving her shoulders, you think, wow, that's an actress. And you know, that's a dancer, excuse me. One of my problems with a Black Swan, for example, is as good an actress as Natalie Portman is. She's not a dancer. And you know instantly she's not a dancer. Paula Negri, it's the exact opposite. You know instantly she's a dancer and she's an actress. And there's, her range is great. Her ability to convey passion in a way that is forceful without yet really being over the top is remarkable.
Absolutely. That was a great overview of the program, of the screenings of the festival. The festival goes beyond the actual screenings. There's lots of events happening, book presentations. A wonderful, wonderful lecture on David Sheppard, which I had the pleasure to interview Russell Merritt on. Mm-hmm. And then the Collegium, of course, with lots of great talks. And what was this year's edition like? There was plenty of great, I mean, I as a participant, as a mentor at this year's edition, and a participant last year, it was great, fascinating. So yeah, could you maybe tell us what happened in the Collegium this time?
I was really pleased because I think that we emphasized the dialogue element of it more than we did last year. So there were fewer official presentations. It was more, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. What are the issues around all of these films? For example, we have an extraordinary strand of films that have been found in the National Library of Norway that were shot in Africa, in East Africa, in Kenya, and that area. We presented them, but we have to also talk about questions of the gaze, which of course is very much in common currency now. Who's shooting these films? How do we look at these works of art as art and just look at them from a purely visual level? How do we then factor in historical context? How do we factor in racial context? How do we factor in male-female context? So there are all of these things that nationalities as well, which I think has been a really interesting topic and needs to be further pursued, is what constitutes a nation? How do we want ourselves to be represented by ourselves and by others? That can even extend to European Westerns, for example, how Europeans are viewing Native Americans, how white Americans are viewing Native Americans, how does that differ? One of the things I love about the Collegium is that it's our forum for raising these topics. And nothing is answered. We're not looking for answers. What we're doing is we're looking for how to further the conversation.
Well, and then there's lots of things that we could talk about. The Pordenone Masterclasses for the musicians. Lots of great music, by the way, to the screenings.
Just to say for listeners who might be outside of Europe or in New York, we'll be doing the Scandinavian films are going to be in Scandinavia House in New York the end of January, early February. So 7 films, Pordenone in New York. And we're looking to further that in other cities, both in Europe and the United States in the future.
Thank you very much for joining us and talking to us
about
this extremely wonderful, magical festival. And thank you very much for inviting me once again.
My pleasure. Thank you, Matt.
And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.